You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast, and once again, special thanks to Revolver Podcast for making all this possible. See what kind of cool things we can get into tonight. This sounds cool. This sounds cool. And this sounds cool. Just pulling up a few from my catalog of pulled stories, because I got a whole huge list of them. You know, I just think all of the paranormal is cool, you know? Like, for instance, just the other day, and there's activity in this house, and I've really, it doesn't bother me. It's not really negative or weird, but I was sitting talking to my wife I was talking to a friend in the living room who had stopped over. And as I was talking, I was standing next to a mirror. Like, the mirror is on a wall right here, and I'm talking like at the corner to him, and the reflection, of course, is showing the bathroom and the hallway. And as I was talking to him, I could see a shadow go from down the hallway into the bathroom. And I turned and looked, and nobody was there. Not a sound, but I saw it. Now, that's not a huge paranormal event. That's not a huge thing at all. But those kind of things are all cool to talk about. They're all fun to explore and discuss. And, you know, when you see things like that, it does kind of correlate to 100 other things that have happened that are, you know, really bizarre. Not big things, often very, very tiny, very small. But when you start looking at the catalog of them, it kind of paints a picture. So share your stories, any of them. And I love hearing them. And it truly is the high point of doing the show for me. I'm not just saying that to try to coax you guys into doing it. I mean, honest to God, I love it when you guys do that. So if you have a story, please email it to paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. And I'd love to share your guys' story as well. Anybody else that hasn't done it, thinking about doing it, but haven't quite committed, please do it. I would be honored. And you don't need to be identified. If you're worried about your identity, don't worry. Just let me know in the email if you want to be named or not, or how you'd like to be referred. Just, you know, you can say, oh, by the way, when you read this, refer to me as, you know, this, but don't say this, you know, or whatever. Let me know. I'm completely flexible. So out of Texas, when I was 15, my parents and I moved into a house near my high school in an older neighborhood. A few months after moving in, my parents went out of town and left me home with my friend Tori. Tori and I were watching television in the main living room, which is open to the kitchen, and suddenly we heard whap, 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 whap from the kitchen in all directions. We got up and peered through the large opening from the living room into the kitchen, and the first thing we noticed was that a bag of flour tortillas was lying on the ground. As we moved further in, we saw that the white bread and homemade biscuits were also on the ground, and on the other side of the kitchen island was a box of crackers. It was as if someone had thrown all of the flour products on the floor. It says on the flour. I think they meant on the floor. In rapid succession. Nothing else on the counters was disturbed or even out of place.
Somebody's got some gluten issues. It's a gluten allergy.
I cracked myself up. Another incident in the same house was when my mom and I were alone one night, and I was in my room reading a book for school, and my mom was in the shower with the door locked, and suddenly I heard my mom fly out of the bathroom in a panic, yelling, "Rachel, what's wrong?" I looked up, and she's standing in my bedroom doorway with a really wild look in her eyes. She then told me that she was getting out of the shower when she heard a voice screaming, "Mom!" at the top of its lungs. She admits it didn't really sound like me, but that we were the only ones in the house, so she assumed that it was. About a month after that, I was walking by my dad's study when I saw a man in a white t-shirt, jeans, and work boots as clear as day out of the corner of my eye. However, I was in such a hurry by that time that I realized what I saw, and I stopped my stride, and I had already passed the doorway, and when I went back, there wasn't anyone there. This was no surprise because I was the only one home, or at least I thought I was. How is that not a surprise? That should be a big surprise. Who or what are these things and what can be done about them? Well, you can certainly cleanse. You can certainly tell them what your expectations are. You can communicate. Now, let me reiterate this. And this is a question I got from a listener, is that how do I talk to them? And it's honestly like this. Okay, I'm addressing a spirit. I've had weird things happen in my house. And it's like this. Look, I know you're here, but I need you to be respectful. You are only allowed to stay if you are of light and love and have good intentions for me and my home and my family. If you do not have these intentions, you must go. You are not welcome. Anything dark, negative, malevolent is banned from this house. You must leave these premises. And if you stay, here are my rules. Do not scare my wife. Do not scare my child. Do not do anything to harm or shock either one of them. And so on and so on. And that's how you do it. It's not a special ritual. It's not a special thing. They're just, if they are indeed a presence, if you do indeed have a presence in your house, they will. You have to understand one thing. Even if they're not standing right next to you, if they're in your home, see, I truly believe spirits don't need to be right next to you to hear you. When you direct your energy of intention to them, your thoughts carry to wherever they are. It's a telepathy, but it doesn't need to have a name associated with it. See, we're used to addressing things by a name. We're used to addressing them by an identity because we we communicate physically. But these beings don't have ears. You know, they don't have ears to hear sounds, and they don't have mouths to make sounds. They work through energy. Now, there's a universal law that simply states energy follows intention. So direct your energy to this presence in your house and talk to it. If it is anywhere around or if it's not completely dormant, once you start talking, it will be there right with you and listening. And you can ask for a sign that it understands and accepts. If you understand and accept this, you know, you can ask for a knock. It may or may not happen. They may not have the energy to do it. You can ask for, you know, that they just adhere to these rules. And if they do not, they must leave. You are banishing them. That is your intention. And project that intention. And 99% of the time, spirits will be respectful to that. They were, in most cases, were once people, and people just generally usually try to be decent people. Some don't, and that's okay. They can be dealt with differently if need be. But it's important to address this. For one, the acknowledgement is important for the being, because I think it has to feel pretty isolating. If it's an earthbound spirit and they are not connected to the other side yet, they haven't transitioned, then they're in a state of confusion or flux or uncertainty, and just the fact that you're addressing them can be very healing, and it can cause, you know, good sentiments. Send out love with your message in your heart, because again, the energy follows the intention, and that's what will be received. But, you know, just be real firm with your expectations. It can't be like, well, you know, I'd really kind of appreciate it if, you know, you wouldn't slam the door anymore, because, you know, that really freaks me out. You know, you got to just say, hey, no more slamming the door. That's done, you know, or whatever, just for example. Now, this is a technique that's been used for like ever in addressing spirits, to confront them if they're being negative, and to address them, but, you know, mean it. Like you're talking to a child, essentially. And I don't mean that you condescend to them, but just be firm like a parent. So just my two cents, take it or leave it, but that's my understanding. That's what I do when I'm dealing with things that are, you know, being disruptive. And, you know, I can't think of any time that it didn't work. Well, no, I can, but that's another show. But at least then you know. Like, if it doesn't work, then you know you have something that's really not respectful, doesn't respect you, doesn't care about you, and is going to do what it's going to do, and then you have to raise the bar. Then you've got to talk to people that can move it out, like Sean, like Deb, like Diane, or whomever, you know, under saging, sprinkling salt around your house with affirmations, prayers with holy water, whatever, you know, whatever your thing is. So just my two cents, but I think it's really powerful. And so just talk. That's how you address spirits. All right. So this was okay. Yeah, I did this one. All right. I forgot what I read and what I didn't read. Okay. The next one is coming out of Florida. I think Florida is a nice place. It'd be warm there, wouldn't it? All right. In 2001, my little cousin Kayla was 3 years old, and she was not told, when our great grandmother, whom she had not seen since she was an infant, had passed away. Kayla was not informed about, nor was she present at the funeral, and she's always had something strange about her. I'm not sure how else to describe it, but she's always seemed very wise beyond her years. She remembers things that you wouldn't expect her to remember, and she seems to understand things very deeply that you wouldn't expect her to. After Kayla's mother had returned home from the funeral, she sat on the couch looking at a rose, and she had taken this rose from off the casket at the funeral as a way to remember her grandmother. Kayla walked into the room and asked her mother for the rose. "No," she answered. "This is Mommy's rose." And then she said, "But Granny said I could have it," Kayla argued. Kayla's mother and my own mother are sisters, and their mother, who we both address as Granny, is very close with us. She still babysits for Kayla almost every weekday after school, so of course my aunt made the assumption that Kayla was talking about her. "When did you talk to Granny?" Kayla very firmly corrected her mother. "Not my granny, your granny." This pretty much freaked my aunt out. She was shaken enough to hand Kayla the rose. That's really cool. From the mouths of babes. I've noticed that on many of the stories where this happens to people, when they're usually very young, or they happen to the elderly when they are very close to death. Does a closeness to birth or death really allow a person a stronger ability to see into the other realm? Or are children just impressionable, so they believe anything they think they see? I would imagine this is true in some cases, but at the same time, how would Kayla have known that the rose her mother had belonged to her great-grandmother? That's a really cool story, and that's a really interesting really interesting review of that whole phenomena. Closer to the other side, whether it's by birth, you came from the other side, or when you're going back to the other side, is that when your veil is at the absolute thinnest and you can see now with, you know, that's an interesting point of view. And I had never considered that. I think it all kind of plays together, but that's, I don't know. I'll have to think on that one. That's kind of profound. Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up, we're going in. All right, the next one, ladies and gentlemen, is coming from Iowa. And Iowa's a lovely place if you like flat ground. No, Iowa's cool. I being from Minnesota, we always poke fun of our neighbor states, and of course Iowa was where you could see tomorrow's weather coming. All right. This story isn't about me. This happened to my sister and her husband. So my sister's name is Steph, and her husband is named Pat. And it's still going on. I'm terribly afraid for both of them. My brother-in-law has an ability to see and talk to those not with us anymore. Because of this, he gets a lot of unwanted visitors. The latest one is the strongest entity they have ever encountered. On the night of June 21st, 2007, Steph woke up from Pat hitting her. She looks over, and he's dead asleep. She hears a knocking on the front door, as well as their dog, Shyla, and she was barking extremely loud, and not once did Pat wake up. After she got Shyla calmed down, she started to doze off, but felt a very strong presence and flung her eyes open. She got up and lit a candle, but this time it didn't work. Stephanie climbed over Pat, and it lit another candle, and it still didn't wake up, like he always does. She lay back down and heard a noise that sounded like someone stomped in the living room, and Shyla started to bark again, and Pat did not hear her, just dead asleep. She shook him to wake him up, and he noticed the distress in her voice as she told him that something was outside their bedroom. They opened the door and let Shyla out. And when they did, she had the biggest razorback and deepest growl they've ever seen. Shyla ran around the house searching everywhere because she knew something was there. They went back to the bedroom, and it felt extremely uncomfortable. Pat started to see two angels in front of him, guarding him from, he explains it as, a dark red mist. They had three candles lit and started praying their hearts out. It went away, and they were finally able to fall asleep. These are the type of things that my brother Pat has to deal with on almost a daily basis. After this incident, they went to go see a psychic, and this wasn't the first time they've seen him, so he knows about Pat's abilities. He had told Pat that what he has is a poltergeist that has attached himself to his right arm. In most of Pat's past lives, he was born into evil. At one time, he was a samurai that was sent to look over a village, but something went bad, and he went on a killing rampage. This poltergeist is something from his past in which he had a contract with, and still thinks that they have that contract. They were told that during the day, it'll sit in the living room and then come to their bedroom at night. The poltergeist told the psychic that the white candles only angered him, and now they burn black candles, burn white dried sage, and tell him the contract is over and that he needs to go away. They live in Kentucky because he's in the army, and this last weekend he came up here to Iowa to visit while Steph stayed home, and she told us yesterday that the poltergeist stayed and bothered her all weekend, making noises all over the house, and she woke up Sunday morning with a scratch on her backside. They were told that once they get it off of Pat, that he needs to close this hole in his arm, and I'm worried that this poltergeist may end up hurting them more than what it already has. Does anyone have any advice that could help them get rid of it? And how to close this hole in his arm once it's gone? I don't know. That's a tough one. That's weird. I've not heard of a ghost being attached to one appendage and a contract going for, you know, lifetimes. I don't know. Okay. So, cool story though, but yeah, I don't know. That's a different kind of phenomenon. And that's a story explanation that I've never heard before. That doesn't mean it's not valid. It just, that's a different thing altogether. Next one's coming out of New York, ladies and gentlemen. New York. Because the boss has something to say, huh? Quit busting my chops. This is a story about when I was about 8 and my cousin was about 9. And she lived in New York at this moment in a visible but low-key neighborhood. It all took place in a 2-story condo. And I was taken to her house one morning to spend the night. But our parents had to leave us soon after to do some errands for a while, and we were all alone in her apartment. I didn't think anything of it at this moment, but we then decided to go to her older brother's room to play with some video games until our parents returned. Then my cousin and I were automatically stopped by the sight of a mother holding the hand of a little girl, wearing all white, heading towards us with the simplest look on their faces. We weren't able to move. We were absolutely frozen where we stood. About 10 seconds later, we ran into her room and looked and locked the doors. We spoke and told each other that what we saw was real, that it was actually an older woman and a little girl that we say was her daughter, and I was so frightened. We couldn't believe that it happened, but we knew that was the only explanation we had. That was the day we've never forgot about. Did it have a meaning? Was the little girl trying to say something? Was she sticking her hand out for a reason? That day was unforgettable, and we tried speaking to our parents, and as you would think, they didn't believe a 9-year-old or an 8-year-old. But was it just our minds playing tricks? I think not. It was a very real experience. Yeah, it's hard to know why would it just appear, and it could just be acknowledgement. Could be a lot of things. That's the hard part about stories like this, is you only get a snapshot. You don't get to see the whole video. You get one frame of it, and it's hard to put a narrative to that. I don't know. Next one is from California, the Sunshine State. And this is a long one. You guys are in for a treat. This one's a long one. All right. My life has really become very surreal, and I feel like I walk one half of my life in the paranormal and the other half in reality. What I'm going to tell you gave me chills up and down my spine. And I will say that I actually saw a ghost with my own naked eyes. But let's start at the beginning. This was a very unusual weekend, to say the least, and the date is Saturday, June 30th, 2007, and I was invited to Marysville, by the soon-to-be paranormal investigator outfit called MRI, or MPI, sorry. Three women who are fascinated by the paranormal and are in the process of starting their own paranormal investigating team. The team is made up of No Name Number One, No Name Number Two, and her daughter, No Name, the daughter, and her daughter, No Name Number One. What? Okay, I don't understand that. No Name Number One is an avid reader of my paranormal articles and contacted me and told me that she lives in an old Victorian home with No Name Three, and possibly this home is haunted. I was welcome to come and spend the night. The home was built in the 1930s, before I left for Marysville. I was mowing my lawn with the help of my neighbor, Rukesh Kumar. When I finished mowing my lawn, I got packed up and headed out, only to return to my home two more times because I kept forgetting things that I might need for the stayover in Marysville. The third time I returned, I was walking out of my house and a car kept slowly driving past my home. The driver kept staring at me, and I looked at the driver and said, "Can I help you?" The driver says, "Are you Paul?" With a quizzical look on my face, I said, "Yeah." Come to find out, this guy with three kids in his car had been reading my articles, and I don't know who this guy is, but okay, apparently he's pretty well known. Very cool. I said, reading my paranormal articles, and he was in my city visiting his family, and he's from Chico, and he wanted to show his kids where a real ghost hunter lives. And I thought to myself, oh, I better not publish my address in my articles. Now I'm becoming a tourist attraction. Yikes. After talking with the driver for a while, I finally got in my vehicle and headed off for the final time towards Marysville, and I kept thinking, I better not publish my address with my articles anymore. Before I know it, I will have some girl that I jilted back in my disco heyday stalking me. Oh, funny. Thoughts of Play Misty for me and Basic Instinct came to mind. Yep, my life has become surreal. Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. All right, everybody, and we're back, at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up, we're going in. I arrive in Marysville, and the house is like a mansion. It's very impressive. I meet No Name 1, 2, and 3, and Number 1 prepares dinner for everyone. Barbecue steak, tossed salad, baked potatoes, toasted French bread, watermelon, and we eat all on the balcony of this beautiful sunny day, with the wind slightly blowing. Number 2, the manager of this home, in Marysville, tells me a story about the area that Number 1 lives in this mansion, and at one time, a tenant of DH lived there. She was in her 40s and was taking a lot of prescription drugs for her diabetes. Mixing alcohol with prescription drugs led to her death. One day she collapsed and was found dead by her care provider, and according to Number 2, she was a very sweet lady, and DH enjoyed taking lots of baths, and that is one of the ways she would pass the time in this sleepy little town. Before nightfall, Number 1 had to make a stop at the Western Union for her daughter, and I drove her to the Western Union at a Kmart in Marysville. Kmart, huh? You don't hear about Kmarts much anymore. And when leaving Kmart, Marysville Finest pulled me over, and the officer looks at me and says, "Did you know you were doing 43 in a 25-mile-per-hour residential area?" I looked at the officer and told him, "Sir, I really didn't realize I was speeding and haven't been pulled over by the police since 1979. He checks me out and lets me go. That was a close one. All of Marysville is residential, and I'm not used to driving that slow, so I let Number 1 drive my car. The ghost tracker. As Number 1 was driving my car, I have a flashback to the day in 1979 when I was pulled over. Man, this guy can narrate. I just got dancing eight and a half days disco dancing with 5 minute break on every hour. And yes, I danced 205 hours and made it to Ripley's Believe It or Not, leaving the marathon. And I was fatigued. The officers thought I'd been drinking, and one of the officers said I looked familiar. And I told the officer, well, you probably seen me on TV. I'm the disco king of Sacramento. And I just got done dancing 205 hours. The officer said, do some dance moves. So here I am pulled over on a busy freeway, and I turn up the music in my car and give the officers a dance show. The officer who asked me to dance drops his flashlight, and with his jaws agape, he says, you can go. Yes, I know. I've lived a strange life, and now back to my scouting mission in Marysville. Well, that was a paragraph we didn't really need. But it's all in the name of entertainment, ladies and gentlemen. I read it all. The sun finally sets, and it's dark, and I bring out my digital camera and start snapping away. I take a lot of pictures, and there are no orbs, no mist, or anything, and then I take a picture of number 3, and there's a clear orb over her head. And I snap another one, and the orb moves to another location, still close to number 3. More pictures, and then one photo on the left-hand side is a red orb approaching number 3 on the top of the steps. And I take the second picture, and this huge red orb is now engulfing number 3. I snap another picture, and the orb is gone. Taking pictures down the steps, there is a red orb moving up the steps. Now, here's where things got weird. As number 1, 2, and 3 analyze my photographs with amazement, I'm looking up the stairs and I actually see a human figure shadow with distinct head and torso moving from number 1's loft to number 3's loft. And there is no one in those lofts. And they are standing with me, and I ask number 1, 2, and 3 if they saw the shadow, and they didn't. That was so frustrating because I have no witnesses. And I saw this human shadow with my own eyes. The chills go up and down my spine, and I'm totally shocked. I'll place my hand on a stack of Bibles and swear to what I saw. I would swear that what I saw in a court of law, just before I saw this human-shaped shadow move across the entryway between the two lofts, I was telling number 1, 2, and 3 that I've never witnessed anything with my own eyes or ears, and of course, that's the ghost detector. Damn, that's a creepy sound, isn't it? It's just high flux detected. Oof, that one gave me chills. It's like, oh, I got it in stereo in my ears. No words, nothing on the radar, but high flux detected. So something must have come in. Sorry about that. So I saw with my own eyes, the chills go up and down my spine, and I'm totally shocked. I will place my hand on a stack of Bibles to swear what I saw. Just before I saw this human-shaped shadow move across the entryway between the two lofts, I was telling number 1, 2, and 3 that I've never witnessed anything with my own eyes, and of course, there was Friday night where I thought I heard an old man's voice in the Folsom Cemetery, but I'm unsure of what I heard. I've only seen orbs, though, through photographs or video, never with my own eyes. And this is the first time I've seen with my own eyes a human shadow, and there was no human to make the shadow. I was absolutely astounded. Number 3 says she feels like she's being watched constantly, and she just has the feeling of being watched. While we were doing our investigation, we heard strange sounds coming out of the attic, and number 2 suggested bats, but I was unsure, and later on this evening, we all piled up in number 2's car, and she showed me the haunted historical Forbes house, and I snapped a few pictures through the window and didn't get anything, and while she drove us around, I checked out the photographs on my camera, and I had taken a lot of pictures of the big red orb, a medium-sized crystal orb, and a tiny orb, and I call the baby orb. In fact, one picture, the red orb engulfs the baby orb, and we stopped over at number 2's home. Number 2's home is quite old as well, and she had me snap some pictures and in her home, and I captured 3 orbs on her ceiling where the family sits and watches television. All the other rooms were orb-free, and Robin tells me that Marysville is an old town, and her former H Street house was very haunted, that the light in the closet would go on and off. The door of this home would swing back and forth. One time, number two was looking for something, and she said out loud, "Where is it?" And she heard a whisper that replied, "It wasn't me." Number two said that one day she saw what appeared to be a small-bodied person kneeling down in her home, and then it was gone. Number two also told me another ghost story, that her mother's home in Live Oak was haunted. When all of her family were in bed, the TV came on, and the whole house lit up for a few minutes. The lights in this home would flicker off and on, and number two thinks to this day it was probably her deceased father. Number two said that the next time I come up, she will show me some of the old, very old, Marysville cemeteries that are reputed to be haunted. She feels Marysville is a paranormal hot zone, and Lindsay was so excited after this investigation, she's purchasing her own digital audio recorder, digital cameras, to get MPI started with her mother, number one, and friend number one. I see that he sometimes mentions names, but usually he's referring to them as 1, 2, 3, and I don't know if he just missed that or what, but I spent the night at this old home and nothing occurred, or I was so out of it I didn't realize anything occurred, and I left on Sunday and zipped over to Vacaville to meet another one of my readers, and her name is Yubasita J. Bell, a.k.a. Baby, or B-E-B-E, is that Beeb or Beebe? She sat and told me that when her husband passed away, that she saw his image zip past her, and one night she felt his presence on her bed, and he was touching and rubbing her leg. And after interviewing Ibisita, she didn't have anything that I could investigate in the present. She had a long story about the ghost of her deceased husband, but it was only a story and nothing I could hold onto or investigate. And I knew at this time it was time to go back home, and hopefully I won't have any more out-of-town visitors patrolling my neighborhood looking for a real ghost hunter to show their kids. There was one more thing, and I'd like to mention about this Marysville home investigation. Whenever the red orb was around, I had a hard time snapping the photo. My new batteries drained completely in the presence of the red orb, and I had to make a store run to get fresh batteries. So, very cool story. And the gentleman that wrote that was named Paul Dale Roberts. And that's really cool. Thank you, sir, for writing your story and letting us share it. That's really cool. He's a hell of a narrator, hell of a storyteller. But the disco part, I don't know if was necessary, but I guess if it's something he's proud of, I understand you want to talk about it. So, all right, the next one, ladies and gentlemen, is from Alaska. You know, Alaska is kind of cool. I have a feeling there's a lot of stuff going on in Alaska. There's just not a lot of people to talk about it or to see it going on. But I tell you what, I keep thinking of when Duke Sullivan was on the show, World Bigfoot Radio, and he talked about a Sasquatch story of a young Squatch getting absolutely torn apart by a number four or whatever he called it. It was like I can't remember the name. Oh, wow, I just hate it when my mind goes blank. What the hell? Wendigo, that are referred to as a Wendigo. They're like a number four type that, you know, they're just huge and ferocious. But I just keep thinking about that over and over. It's like, oh my God. Ugh. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But if you haven't seen that episode, I would strongly suggest checking it out. It's in our archives here on YouTube, and it was a really good episode. And Duke and I have, you know, becoming great friends. It's one of those guys that I know I could hang out with for years and always learn something new. He's just one of those people that is so learned and is so devoted to his craft that he'd be one of those people that you could totally apprentice under and probably never get near what he has. So anyway, this is another kind of long story, but It's the kind of love that I give you guys every day. All right, let me read through this and we'll call it a night. So, I have to say that I'm officially freaked. The shadow people in my room are still there. Not only that, but they've started messing with me, and I mean really messing with me. Every time I go to walk out of my room, I feel someone pull my hair hard enough to yank my head back. And I hear distinct growlings. Jeez. I turn around and there's nothing there. And at night, whenever my light is on or off, the cat is with me or not, they appear. Of course, they only appear when there is a shadow. And where there's a shadow, rather. And there is one corner of my room that is always in shadow. Light or no light, I can never really see back there. I put my TV there, so most of it is covered, but unfortunately that hasn't done me any good. I still hear what sounds like shuffling footsteps, harsh whispers, knocking on my window, and, okay, my mom says that this is just my imagination, but if you have a box TV, go up to it and smack the top or side of it, how can you imagine that sound? It wakes me up in the middle of the night and keeps me going. And it keeps going, rather, and going, tapping and knocking and rapping, and I'm going crazy. A few nights ago, I went to lay down in my room, and I was close to midnight, and I went to my room and shut the door and just fell under the bed, and I laid there for a while, and then I felt something sharp, rake across the backs of my legs. Well, I screamed and bolted upright, and I looked around thinking that it could have been my cat, but he wasn't even in the room, and my door was shut tight still. I went to see where he was and found him sleeping in the living room, right where I'd left him, and I checked the backs of my legs and found three distinct bleeding scratches that ran across both calves. Needless to say, I didn't go back into my room, and I slept out in the living room with my brother and his friends, who did hear me scream, by the way. And last night I sat up, and when all the noise started up again, and I stared right at the darkest corner of my room, and though I do not practice religion, I said, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus Christ," out loud, very clear, and very firmly. Instead of feeling better, the atmosphere in the room got real heavy, and I felt like bolting right out of there instantly. When the feeling didn't subside, I told whatever it was in my room to please leave me alone, and to stop tormenting me. I heard what sounded like evil laughter, you know, like someone was giggling at my discomfort and feeble attempt to make it leave. I've tried everything I can think of, and they keep coming back, and I tried time and time again to find out if anything strange had ever happened in the home before we moved there, but I couldn't find anything. There's nothing that could be causing this unless they're drawn to me. None of this happened until one of my friends dared me to enter our local cemetery alone. I told them to leave me alone about it, and they said, "Sure, fine, whatever." And when I turned away from them, they pushed me over the wall, and the next thing I knew, I was back on the outside of the gate, and my friends were freaking out. And I asked them what happened, and they told me that the instant I was over the wall, I started screaming bloody murder and then collapsed. I'm thinking that these shadow people have something to do with the incident, but I'm not sure. I'm scared and angry and wish that they would just go away. And I don't know what to do, and my mother won't believe anything I say, and I showed her the scratches, and she said it was the cat and refused to hear anything more. Any advice would be welcome. I was willing to share my time and my space with these entities, but now they've turned a bit violent, so I don't know. I just need help. And since this story is from 2007, I'm sure hoping you got that help. But, you know, here's the thing. If you're not a religious person, if you're not a devoted religious person, a word is just a word. Invoking the name of Jesus Christ without the faith attached to it is not going to matter. It's just like saying, "Phil Hansen." You know, if you don't have that passion of that faith, the words are empty. You have to have the devotion. It has to be something you really believe in and something that's really powerful to you. Because a word is just a sound vibration, but it becomes empowered by your faith. by your belief in that word, in whatever that is. And it doesn't matter whether it's Christian or whatever. In my opinion, it doesn't matter. And there might be many people that would argue the hell out of that. And I'm sorry if that's the case. But, you know, I think that all faith is born in the heart of the worshiper or the believer. You know, and if you don't have that faith, if you don't have that passion, it's just empty words. It's like being an atheist but walking through trying to read a Bible to, you know, purge a spirit. It's not going to matter if it's not your faith. But, you know, it's just my belief. So I'm not surprised that it didn't work. And, of course, the entities, they aren't fooled by that because they can feel. They feel the energy. Again, they're not... You really can't lie to an entity because it can feel that energy. It's not hearing your words, it's hearing your energy. You know, that's what it responds to. So if your words have no power in them, then they're just words. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed this journey through the paranormal portal. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.